This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Thirty years since Tupac was gunned down in Las Vegas and lost his life. I remember sitting in my parents' basement with my Windows 95 computer, working away on it. I was actually editing some audio at the time. I was a mere child. I was a teenager at the time. Not quite working in radio yet. I was 14. I started working in radio that fall, but I was messing around playing with audio on my Windows 95 computer when I heard the news over the radio that Tupac had, in fact, died. Never in my wildest dreams would it be that 30 years later, here I am sitting in another basement, my own basement, a whole lifetime before me, talking about the trial that's now finally starting. You know, when cases happen, when crimes happen, like, I wonder how long that trial will take. 30 years! Longer than his lifetime for this to actually make it to a courtroom. But we're here, and we're bringing you the coverage every single day. I'd love for you to weigh in with your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we work through every day of trial. As Keefe D, Dwayne Keefe D. Davis, faces the charges for the murder of Tupac Shakur in 1996. Dwayne Keefe D. Davis walked into that Clark County courtroom Monday in a blue suit and tie. He scanned the audience before sitting down next to his attorney 13 years after the most famous, 30 years rather, after the most famous murder, unsolved murder in American music. Someone was finally sitting in front of a jury for it. Davis is the first person ever charged in the killing of Tupac Shakur. The trial opened Monday with opening statements from both sides nearly 30 years after a shooter in a white Cadillac opened fire on Shakur's BMW at the intersection of Flamingo and Colvault in Las Vegas. Maybe you've been past that intersection a time or two in the last 30 years. I know I have. Shakur's family sat in the front row behind prosecutors. His stepbrother, Mopreme Shakur, watched the proceedings from a few feet away. Cousins traveled from Atlanta to be in the building. Fans came from across the country. One man rode a bus from Denver. A producer from Georgia flew in for the opening. The courtroom gallery filled before opening statements began. The jury is 6 men and 10 women, plus alternates. Some of them were toddlers when this shooting happened. One juror told the court during jury selection that she'd never heard of Tupac Shakur. They'll decide whether a man's own words are enough to convict him. The case has been cold for nearly 3 decades. For a grand jury indicted Davis in September of 23. His own memoir, published 4 years earlier, provided much of the probable cause for the arrest. The charges are murder with a deadly weapon and a gang enhancement. Chief Deputy District Attorney Banu Palal opened the prosecution's case with a photograph from September 7th of 1996. It was the night of the Mike Tyson heavyweight fight at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Shakur was 25 years old. And in the crowd with Death Row Records co-founder Suge Knight. The Tyson fight ended in the first round, a knockout that lasted 90 seconds. What happened in the casino lobby afterward lasted longer than the bout itself. Palal showed the jury security camera footage of what happened next. Shakur and several Death Row associates spotted Davis's nephew, Orlando Anderson, in the MGM Grand lobby and attacked him. The beating was caught on casino cameras, lasted roughly a minute. Anderson was on the floor while multiple men kicked and punched him. Security eventually broke it up. The footage the jury watched Monday was grainy and 30 years old. The violence in it wasn't ambiguous. Palal told the jury what that beating set in motion. Shakur publicly on camera participated in a humiliating beating of Dwayne Davis's nephew, Palal said. 2.5 hours later, Shakur was gunned down in a drive-by shooting from a white Cadillac. The prosecution's theory is this, that Davis orchestrated the shooting in retaliation for the beating of his nephew. He allegedly provided the gun and gave the order to fire from inside a white Cadillac that pulled alongside Tupac's BMW at a stoplight on Flamingo Road. Pallal did not claim Davis pulled the trigger. He told the jury Davis planned the shooting in retaliation and that the evidence would come from Davis himself. The remarkable part, Pallal said, is that Davis had been providing it willingly for 2 decades. Pallal laid out the timeline of that September night. The beating happened at the MGM Grand around 8:45 in the evening. By 11:15, Shakur and Knight were driving in a black BMW through the Las Vegas Strip, part of a convoy heading to a nightclub. The BMW stopped at a red light at Flamingo Road and Koval Lane. A white Cadillac pulled up on the passenger side. Someone in the back seat opened fire, and Shakur was hit 4 times. Knight was grazed by a fragment but survived. The white Cadillac drove off into the night. 6 days later, Shakur died at University Medical Center at 25 years old. No arrest was made. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department investigated for years without filing charges. The case became the most famous cold case in the history of American music. Shakur had been nominated for 6 Grammys and would be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2017, 21 years after his death. Davis has identified himself in writing and on camera as the shot caller in the killing. Now he says, I was just exaggerating. It's all, oh shit. Pallal told the jury they wouldn't need to take the prosecution's word for it. The evidence would come from Davis himself. In 2008, Davis sat for a recorded interview with Las Vegas investigators. He'd been granted transactional immunity in a federal drug case, and in exchange, he described being in the white Cadillac the night of the shooting. He described the gun and what happened at the stoplight at Flamingo and Cobalt. He described handing a weapon to someone in the backseat of the white Cadillac. That recorded interview sat in a filing cabinet for years while no charges were filed. In 2018, he appeared in a BET documentary and told the story again on camera. He described the shooting on podcasts and in magazine interviews, giving detailed accounts of who was in the car and what each person did. Then he published a memoir called Compton Street Legend. He put his name on the cover. The book described a September night in 96, a white Cadillac, a stoplight on Flamingo Road, and a gun. A senior prosecutor noted that had Davis never written that book, he would probably never have been prosecuted. The book was published in 2019. The memoir gave the grand jury what 2 decades of investigation couldn't, an admission. The defense's opening was shorter and built around one question. Attorney Michael Snaft asked the jury what facts they have after 30 years. He told the jury, Davis wrote the memoir for one reason, money. The story would sell whatever it was, whether it was true or not. A man can write fiction about his own life if the fiction pays well enough. So he's just a hustler. He's a shitty hustler who makes money off of taking credit for other people's bad deeds. That's the defense. The defense argued Davis built a brand on the Tupac story and turned notoriety into income. The memoir, the docuseries, the documentaries, the interviews, Snaff called it's all a hustle, not a confession. The story was a product, and Davis was selling the only thing the market would buy from him. Snaff reminded the jury that Davis had given conflicting accounts over the years. Details shifted depending on who was asking and how much the answer was worth. The book's co-author has disputed parts of the account, and no one corroborates any of it. In March of 25, from a jail cell, Davis told reporters he was innocent. He said he wasn't even in Las Vegas the night of the shooting. That claim came years after detailed accounts placing himself in the white Cadillac at the stoplight at Flamingo and Cobalt. The evidence gap sits at the center of this trial. No murder weapon was ever recovered, and the white Cadillac was never found. No physical evidence connects Davis directly to the shooting. All 3 other men who rode in that Cadillac are dead. Orlando Anderson, the nephew whose beating started the chain, was shot and killed in 98 at the Compton car wash. The driver, DeAndre Smith, died of natural causes in 04, and Terrence Brown was shot and killed in 2015. Davis is the only man from that car still alive. For 20 years, he couldn't stop telling the story of what happened inside it. Judge Carly Kearney has ruled the jury can hear everything Davis has ever said publicly about the shooting. The memoir, the documentaries, the recorded police interviews are all admissible, despite his current claim that none of it was true. Suge Knight is even on the prosecution witness list. He was in the BMW with Shakur that night and is the only other living person from either vehicle. Knight is serving a 28-year sentence in a California prison for a separate killing. Knight has said he won't cooperate with the prosecution. He made the statement in a recorded media interview. His position on testifying against another man, it's worse than taking a gun and shooting someone in the head. Prosecutors listed him as a witness they intend to call, but whether he appears and what he says are open questions. The prosecution plans to call 35 to 45 witnesses over the coming weeks. The defense plans a handful, including an expert on false confessions. Their argument, public statements made for money don't prove the statements are true. Davis is 63 years old now, faces a mandatory life in prison without parole if convicted. He waived jury sentencing, meaning Judge Kearney alone will decide if found guilty. The prosecution is asking a jury to convict a man based almost entirely on his own words. The defense is asking that same jury to believe he lied about it for 30 years because it paid. Keefe D. told the world what happened on Flamingo Road. He wrote it down, said it on camera, described it under immunity, and published it as a book. The jury's job is to decide whether he gets to take it back. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We are going to be bringing you updates on this trial every single day until we get to a conclusion. So if you want to follow us, please do hit subscribe. Whether you're watching us right now on YouTube, hit subscribe there. Take us with you in podcast form, in audio form, so you can listen to us on the way to work, at the gym, out for a walk, whatever you're doing. The audio form has even more cuts for you to listen to and get in depth on these cases that we're following for you right here. There's a QR code if you're watching us on YouTube. Scan that, takes you to whatever podcast player you like best, and hit subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you have a moment. All right, we'll continue our conversation in the comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.